to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean. I'm Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Happy Halloween, Ben.
Oh, is it Halloween? Is this our spooktacular? We've had a spooktacular.
Yeah, you've heard the special theme song.
Oh, with the rattling chains and the moaning ghouls.
Yeah, that's all you have to do to make it a special Halloween theme song. You just, like, whatever the sound smoke makes.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of that in there. There's probably some thunder, right?
A wolf in the distance.
That's probably what the wolf sounds like, right?
That's going like, ooh, hubba hubba. And licking its lips because we're such sexy podcasters.
Oh, that's where the wolf whistle comes from, right?
Right, yeah.
I can't even whistle. I can't whistle on cue.
It's all the scary sound effects and then one horny cartoon wolf.
Yeah. Horny wolf kind of ruined it for all wolves, didn't he?
Yeah. Because
not all wolves, I think we can all agree.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Most wolves are vicious. Did I ever tell you my wolf story?
No, you never didn't. I'm just delighted that you have a wolf story.
I went to a very like progressive high school. Interested in ecology and being good stewards of the earth kind of a vibe to this place.
You don't say.
And for like a morning, you know, symposium one time, they brought like a wolf conservation expert who brought a wolf.
Whoa.
And they didn't tell anybody that this was happening. So it like, you're like, you don't know if it's going to be a morning meeting or a morning symposium. You know, it's just like, I think it was like two different times per week we had one or the other. Usually it was morning meeting, but we filed in. I happened to get a front row seat for this.
Pretty good chance at the school you went to that it could be a symposium.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You never know.
And what do you know? I got a front row seat like 3 feet from where the wolf was going to be.
Wow.
And a wolf is a bit like a, you know, a rifle. Like if you've ever seen like somebody, like a soldier with an M16.
Uh-huh.
It's very like, it's very arresting because you're like, that is a device that exists for the purpose of killing people. And that is like very much the feeling you get when you look at a wolf and they're like, this is a friendly wolf. And they talk to us about like how important
it was. But the wolf's like openly flirting with your classmates and stuff, just being a real sleaze about it.
Yeah, yeah. It bore its chest and a heart palpitated out of it. It dropped its jaw and its tongue unrolled.
Oh, yeah, the tongue trick.
Mm-hmm.
The wolves are very good at cunnilingus.
It's a babe and got out a fork and a knife.
Yeah.
But it was a rainy day. They told us, like, hey, just as you're leaving the main hall, we're going to have the wolf out there on the north lawn to do its wolf business. Please do not open an umbrella. That is like the one. This is a very tame wolf, a very people-friendly wolf. An umbrella will set this wolf off. And inevitably, a friend of mine was walking up to the library for a class, and she opened her umbrella, and I watched.
Why did she do that?
She did because she was a fucking high school kid, and she wasn't paying a ton of attention in the wolf class that we didn't know we were going to have that morning.
You know what? This is going to sound so ugly out of context. But was she kind of asking for it?
Well, yeah. What happened was the wolf started moving assertively toward her in a way where like the wolf handler was like digging her heels in and like sliding across the lawn, like,
ooh,
and like saying like, close the umbrella.
Shoot her.
Yeah. Nothing happened. The umbrella got closed. It wasn't even like really rainy enough to justify opening one.
Oh, that's the worst part.
And I know that like as a most of your life Seattleman, you know that
very few Seattleites own umbrellas.
There's almost no scenario a Seattleite would call a justification to use an umbrella, but
right.
This was even a stretch by Northern California standards. And Yeah, like nothing happened, but yeah, like it's one of those things where like it's really stuck with me every time I hear a in-flight safety announcement or something like that. Like I'm not really like looking for the closest exit to my seat, and I know that just like my friend in high school, like when the fucking plane goes down into the drink and we need to make an emergency exit, I'm going to be the one that's like, fuck, I wasn't really paying attention.
You're going to be heading to the exit not closest to you, Ben.
Yeah.
Like a fool.
Like a fucking idiot. But yeah, like I think about it all the time.
You're going to die in a pool of airplane gas. Sorry, buddy.
Fortunately for me, airplane fuel can't melt bones.
I think we can be sure about that. Wow. Close encounter with a wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good story.
Yeah.
Damn.
A wolf. I don't know. Why did that come up? I can't even remember. Oh, because it's Halloween and we're talking about scary wolves.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have anything as scary as that, but that's a pretty good Marin.
Have you ever... You never met a wolf?
Never met one. I mean, you and I met coyotes in LA.
That's true. Yeah, we've had close coyote encounters.
Wolves are enormous.
Yeah, they're really a different thing. Like, if you see a wolf, it really makes you think a coyote is not a threat, which is wrong. A coyote is very dangerous.
Yeah. They'll all fuck you up.
Yeah.
Human beings are very fragile creatures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My dog is convinced he could take a coyote. Anytime I take him on a hike in one of our many LA hiking trails and he sees a yote, he tries to pick the fight that would be his last, you know?
My beloved dog Ripley is still focused on squirrels as her as her main enemy in life.
Size appropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
I think a squirrel would probably fuck her up. She's all very annoying bark and very few bites.
That's not my experience.
She's a play biter.
Yeah.
Bite says love. That's what Ripley says.
Mm. Well, Adam, do you want to get into a terrifying, haunting episode of Star Trek Voyager?
Very spooky, Ben, is Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 23, Living Witness.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
Tim Russ's first and only directed episode.
This was such a catastrophic failure that they never let him direct another.
It's funny. Tim Russ was like, I went to Star Trek directing school. I waited in the queue for my turn.
Yeah.
I did the thing.
I got a weird episode.
I got a weird episode. I did a good job. And that's it. Like, I'm good. I know what it's like now. That's all. And I respect it.
I do too. You know, like it is a cliche in Hollywood of somebody saying what I really want to do is direct. Directing is fucking hard and stressful. And if you're also acting in the thing, I can imagine a lot of people finding it very distasteful to have to do both in a week.
My main thing is trying to reduce the amount of things I think about. And as I get older, I'm more rattled by how many there are.
Yeah.
And that's what directing is. Directing is thinking about every single thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's adding an infinite number of to-do items to your checklist.
Yeah. Our cold open is a Janeway's log, and it looks a little different than we're used to seeing. This log comes with leather.
Mm,
leather gloves and a tightly shorn haircut by Janeway. This is, I think, her fourth different haircut this season.
She's got some mousse in there.
Yeah.
She's giving herself some upward volume, unlike the last couple episodes.
A little bit of a can I speak to your manager kind of look to the hairstyle, I'd say.
Yeah, this is Dark Karen, and she is talking about her sort of philosophy of when to apply violence.
Yeah.
And she turns around, she's in a black turtleneck, no comm badge on the uniform. And I was like, wow, that is all it takes to make a Starfleet uniform look very scary.
We often see the Starfleets resign their commission by setting the comm badge on the desk, and they're often talked out of this, right?
Yeah.
Like, put it back on, man. You don't want to do that because as soon as you walk out that door, the leather gloves get put on and you get a haircut and shit gets real dark. We often don't see the next step, but this is the next step. It's gloves and a haircut.
This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultra violence.
She's talking to this dude who wants her to kill Kyrians.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, we know you can do it because you're the ship of death.
Your reputation in this quadrant precedes you.
And they're brokering a deal, right? It's like, you kill all these baddies for us. We are going to show you where a special wormhole is that will take a lot of time off of your journey. It is it's a wormhole for murder.
And this seems like a great deal for this version of Janeway. She leaps at the opportunity to take him up on this trade.
She does. Nothing more tempting. I mean, there is a little bit of back and forth about, like, so we're going to risk our lives to kill your enemies?
Yeah. But that's a negotiating ploy, right? Like, I think we see in a little bit how much she relishes the killing.
There's coffee in that violence.
Right. Because, like, if she was really worried about it, I think she would want to, like, see something that would be some sort of satisfactory proof that this wormhole is real.
Yeah,
it's a pretty fantastic
true.
Claim. Like, oh yeah, I got like $1 million in a suitcase in my trunk.
Yeah.
You don't need to see it.
The banger interrupts this negotiation. And on the bridge, we see some people in some different places than we're used to. We see some aliens that we aren't used to seeing. Neelix is at ops.
Yeah.
There's a Kazon officer with a rifle. And everyone is wearing these leather gloves.
Yeah.
You don't see any bare hands this entire episode.
I mean, that would be unseemly, Adam.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you do see one bare hand because Janeway is doing that thing where she takes off a glove and like slaps it into her palm, which is, I don't know why villains are always doing that. Like a begloved villain loves to take one glove off and like smack their palm with the empty glove, right?
Say what you will about the nightmare that this ship has become in this version of time, but not many people are getting sick from touching surfaces
right.
in this timeline, you know? So there are some positives.
Yeah, but these are people that are pro-glove but anti-mask. Interesting.
Yeah.
They rejected the mask mandates.
Right. These are the Kyrians that have dropped bangers on Voyager, and they are the sworn enemy to Daleth's people.
Yeah. They talk about how they're going to attack this planet, and they refer down to the doctor. And when we cut down to Six Bay, we see the doctor's head has like Soong type data parts in it, and he's all yeah. plugged into stuff, and he's got weird eyes. He looks like an android.
Yeah. He looks like someone who's walked around the ship not wearing gloves, touching surfaces, and then touching his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks very painful.
That's not what you want. He should serve as a lesson to all of them.
Yeah.
Chakotay has a much bigger face tattoo.
Yeah. See, I heard they were going to cancel Chakotay.
Hmm.
Not a lot of people are going to miss it, though, I don't think.
Yeah. Was that a product of the company that makes Klondike bars?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I wouldn't miss Klondike bars either. What would I do for a Klondike bar? Fucking nothing. Give me an it any day of the week.
I'd turn around and walk away. Daleth is shocked at how things seem to be escalating here. He was just here to do a simple deal, but like Janeway wants to use biogenic weapons in a kind of shock and awe strategy to end this war.
Yeah, this is going to kill hundreds of thousands, and Daleth is like, kind of not what we were asking for. Like,
I want them defeated, but this is genocide.
Defeat, genocide. My quibble with semantics.
This is a real over-deliver on an under-promise in a way that we're not actually cool with. But it's too late. Janeway is pot committed, and the doctor has plugged into the phaser array, and we cut to the exterior of the ship, and it looks like a redress of the Voyager inspired by that rifle that Guinan keeps behind the bar in 10 Forward.
Yeah.
It's all nubby and terrifying looking.
Yeah, it looks like the sort of ship, if you were to rub up against it, you'd be wounded. It would hurt badly.
Yeah. They shoot these biogenic weapons via the phasers down at the surface of the planet. And they also, like, lock up Daleth.
Whose fault is this, really? I mean, it's not Daleth's fault. Daleth didn't want genocide.
I can relate. You know, sometimes you get the process of a genocide started before you've really thought through the ramifications, and then you live a life of regret.
Sort of a genocide snowball. Once things start going, before you know it, all of the Hooshnok are dead.
Oopsies.
There is no brig to fit me or my crime.
We cut to a man working a display in a kind of museum setting, and they're watching Voyager do this to the planet. And he's starting to talk about what this is.
There's kind of a record scratch.
Yeah.
You're probably wondering how Voyager got into this situation.
We're in a museum, Adam.
Yeah.
It's 700 years later, pre the burn.
I know. I was thinking so much about that. Like, how much do you have to be careful if you're Star Trek Discovery about this specific episode?
I think very.
Yeah.
It would have been fun if some Kyrians or whatever had been part of the big, like, diplomatic conference in, you know, when they were trying to decide what to do with the DMA.
What does this thing bar? DMA! It would have been crazy to have run into the doc at some point, too, in his little shuttle on the way home.
Yeah. Oh, hey, don't mind me. Just looking for my friends.
Like, give it a post-credit sequence where it's just the doc cruising around. Maybe he doesn't even interact with anyone.
No.
Yeah.
No, he's just like, interesting. I noticed that, what was the mineral that they were looking for, that the DMA was looking for?
Boronite.
Oh, jeez.
Boronite. Of course.
I don't fucking remember.
Yeah, me neither. Look it up or watch that season of Discovery.
Yeah.
That is not what this show is about.
No, it's not.
We didn't have enough boronite ore left to synthesize more.
These aliens, man. The Kyrians. They look like if Bajorans just had the loaf daubed on but not sculpted. It's just like a little smushy crap on their face, but it doesn't really look like anything.
They look like they've got tonsil stones in between their eyes. I was horrified by
them.
Oh,
God, it's got to smell so bad in that museum.
All I wanted to do is stick a Q-tip back there and push it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yuck.
Yeah. Oh, man. They call themselves the Kyrians. Everyone else calls them the Halitosans.
Mm. Yeah.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
Ben, we're in a museum, which means we've got a docent here.
Mm-hmm.
And our docent for the episode is named Quarren. And he tells a tour group what happened to their people 700 years ago.
Yeah. Quarren, played by Jadan of the Drumhead fame.
I know.
I take injections. Everyone knows that.
Nice to have him back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Henry Warrenitz.
Yeah, the suffering of the Kyrian people has continued to this day. This is the thing they look back on, the Voyager incident, as being kind of the moment that their fortunes changed. And this is sort of almost like a Holocaust museum in a way. Like, when you think about it, this is a museum that is about the, like, horrible crimes that were visited on their people.
This is something that I feel like Lower Decks would have really leaned in on pretty hard in terms of, like, the way a museum works.
Right.
And all that. There's less of that going on here. I mean, absent the Q&A portion of the presentation that we get next.
Yeah. I mean, this is a Star Trek trope, right? Like the museum showing a video of unspeakable violence.
Yeah. Why are they showing a whale being butchered? Do they even know what whales are?
There are some Vaskins, the type of alien that Tedrin is, also on this museum tour.
Yeah.
A couple of them take some umbrage with the way this story is being told. They don't want critical Kyrian theory taught in schools. Mm-hmm. They don't want their kids knowing about this stuff.
A lot of nice background acting this episode in terms of that kind of conflict, I think.
Yeah, and you start to understand that the Kyrians and the Vaskins, like, cohabit this planet or several planets, but the Kyrians are sort of a somewhat marginalized community, relatively speaking. And this is a way of, like, you know, talking to all members of this society about, like, what factors led to that. And
right.
It's interesting because it's not super condemnatory of Daleth as a character. Daleth seems like he sort of got in over his head and did something like that wound up being horrible for the Kurians primarily, but not because he like set out to be as evil as the Voyager wound up being.
Right. There are some questions that like people have at a flight museum, basically, like how big was the Voyager and how many people were on it?
Yeah.
Or whatever. And the docent rightly is like, why don't we watch more footage instead of trying to answer your stupid questions? And in the footage, we catch back up with the genocide in progress. This thing that they've attacked the planet with has only killed 3,000. And Janeway is pretty let down by this number, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not great. Down in a lab, Chakotay and Kim are like torturing a dude to try and find where this dude Tedrin is. Tedrin is a Kurian that they're looking for.
They hold a Q-tip up to the side of his nose and they're like, I'll push it out, man. I will do it.
I won't even get super close-up video of it and put it on Reddit. And he's like, no! No!
Yeah. Boy, Chakotay's tattoo.
Yeah.
Bears mentioning.
Really go toe-to-toe with Q's tattoo in that one episode.
Yeah, it's enormous.
Mine's bigger.
Claims to still be a man of peace, an enlightened man, but he rolls with these beasts.
It looks like he got into Kim's hair gel here, too.
Yeah, he's gone back to the Caesar look. Kim is getting ready to like hit this dude with a pipe, and the doctor intervenes and says, like, no, like that's too brutal a way of torturing.
I remind you, he must still be able to speak.
What I'm going to do is inject this guy with something that dissolves his ocular nerves.
Yeah. And it is painful, if you're wondering.
Yeah. I mean, he says that the cerebral cortex will ultimately liquefy.
Yeah, that sounds bad, too.
That's how they get this guy to give up Tedrin's position.
It looks like there's agonizer boosts in the background of the scene. Like, why didn't they just throw him in there? Did you see those?
If you have an agonizer, why not use it?
I know.
Or was that their spore drive? You know?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't know.
All of this is bad history, you know, like speculation by historians based on imperfect artifacts. We will come to find out.
What makes this scene even worse is that the doc has two hypo sprays, and one of them has like a red ring and one of them has a blue ring. He gave him the rectal eye toxins, didn't he, Ben?
Oh, god damn. It's really a shame. I mean, I guess kind of intentional, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes it worse. That's more agonizing, isn't it? Like, not only are my eyes burning out, but that hypo spray was meant for a butt. You bastards.
Losing my eyesight is one thing. The indignity of this is another. Up on the bridge, Chakotay comes with the info about where they can find Tedrin. And the captain is not like super thrilled that this information was extracted under torture. You can't trust information you torture out of people.
Yeah.
People will tell you whatever it takes to make the pain go away. And that's the only reason torture is bad.
You ever stop to think about why you might have been glitter bombed, Ben? Maybe some out of context statements.
Yeah.
This isn't Janeway's problem, though. Like, no matter how the information was extracted, she's like, all right, Chakotay, or however I pronounce your name, take an assault team down and pick up this guy.
Yeah. Kind of weird. Like, that's sort of how they pronounced his name in the first half of season one, I feel like.
Yeah. It's a nice throwback, isn't it?
Yeah. Some of the historicity of this stuff is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
The Kurians managed to beam aboard. The Voyager is boarded in the engine room, and this is when they pull out one of their most devious tricks.
Computer, initiate the Borg activation sequence.
They've got domesticated Borgs on the ship.
It's not just Seven of Nine. She's got a bunch of Borgs with her.
Yeah.
Like attack Borgs.
Yeah, and Janeway orders them to attack the guys who beamed in there and assimilate the survivors.
Man, Scary as hell.
Yeah.
I've taught you much, my little droogies.
And they're like really doing like dramatic, like action movie Borg shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You see the Dracula tubules go in.
Yeah. Janeway's like, yeah, go ahead and assimilate as many as you want. Those can be part of Team Attack Borg, mm-hmm. if you like.
Yeah, I mean, they're your problem now.
Mm-hmm. They've nabbed Tedrin. They're heading back to Voyager. It's pretty exciting stuff.
They take him to the mess hall, which I guess isn't the mess hall anymore. And I wanted to know about this version of Voyager history. Like, are they... yeah. I got a question about the simulation we're watching. Really dig all the gloves and tattoos, by the way. Mm. My question is this. Where do these guys eat? They shot that guy in the middle of the mess hall, but there are no tables there. There are no kitchen implements in that room. Are we supposed to believe that they all eat privately in their quarters?
Is this a future that presupposes that they're beaming the poops out, but they're also beaming the food in?
And how simultaneously is that arrangement? I'm going to go beam a hot dog into my mouth.
Get a life.
Tedrin winds up being a pretty plain dude. He's just like bone stock white guy with a little bit of loaf on his face.
You know how there's the scene in the war movie where like the guy refuses to surrender, but it is the form of refusal that is like spitting in someone's face and double middle fingering their way to death. Tedrin is a guy who is like a door-to-door salesman who gets politely declined at the doorstep.
Yeah.
And then gets shot in the back for it.
Yeah. He is like the member of the Church of Latter-day Saints on mission who sees the mezuzah on the door.
Yeah.
And just turns around.
I know you don't want to do it.
Do it. Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
What do you make of Janeway personally executing this guy and his associate? Pretty hardcore.
Pretty brutal to see. You always wonder like what goes into the decision of what the phaser's effect is going to look like. Because mm-hmm. this is not phaser set to gore or even phaser set to vaporize. It's just phaser set to like faceplant.
You don't see the beam going in either. Like it's obscured by the birdie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we got out of an effects shot there.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean, there's a little glow, right? Isn't there a little glow?
Yeah, but that's practical glow, right? Can't you just, you got a person on a light switch making that happen.
I think that was an effects glow.
You think?
Yeah, I think they pulled out After Effects for that one glow.
My love of practical effects is the reason for that suspicion.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's a projection, Ben.
That's probably why Tim Russ didn't get invited back.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You didn't go practical for that? Are you kidding me? So she ices these two characters, and the camera pans over, and one of the windows in the mess hall just like looks into the museum.
Yeah.
And Quarren is like still leading the tour. It's like the ride in at the beginning of Jurassic Park.
Hold on to your butts.
I really tried to figure out whose decision this was visually, because I think it's a really elegant way to do these transitions. And I'm just going to blame Tim Russ. I think this is a great idea.
I think that is a director choice, right?
I think so too, yeah.
So that's sort of the end of the Voyager encounter. After that, things just got real bad for centuries for his people.
So exit through the gift shop. Maybe pick up some $20 novelty leather gloves, a mm-hmm. plushie Janeway.
$50 gym bag. Wonder why this gym bag costs this much.
An enormous face tattoo, like too big for a kid.
Yeah.
What kind of kid with a giant face is going to have this temporary tattoo on him?
And it doesn't feel like a weird and uncomfortable cultural appropriation when it's like the people that genocided you
right.
to wear their tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe distasteful.
Sure.
Outside of the context of a Halloween party. You know, like if the picture ever gets out, it might fuck with your ability to win public office. Like, did you think that was a fun costume to put on?
I mean, Are you suggesting like a quad box apology might be the next step after pictures are released of a comically large, like an adult sized face tattoo on a child's face?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
All right. I mean, a child doesn't know any better.
No, but still. It's still a bad look.
One of the exhibits in this museum is a torpedo casing from Voyager, which, based on their rarity, I mean, this is like an Argyle card.
Yeah, yeah. That is the natural Jaeger of Voyager artifacts. And the guy's like, this is a museum that does not put velvet ropes around the priceless artifacts. Like,
there's a
museum patron just like elbow deep in... in this thing, and he's like, hey, yeah, that's actually a 25 megaton weapon, could take out a whole city.
I love that the docent does a bit here on this guy, because docent bits are the driest bits, aren't they?
They really are.
Mega dry. You put docent bits inside a bag of beef jerky so it doesn't get gross. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how dry a docent bit is.
Yeah, the desiccant of bits.
Yeah.
The gift shop at this museum does swift business in chapstick because everybody's so dry on the way out.
That's what she says.
Uh-oh, Ben, there's a Vaskan truther there. And this guy takes great umbrage with the stories being told in this museum.
Yeah. Some of his best friends are Kyrians.
Yeah. Important to know that.
I don't have a problem with your species.
He doesn't like the implication that he has any personal responsibility for the oppression of the Kyrian people.
Yeah.
He puts a tough question to Quarren. He's like, so, you know, you've got like more artifacts to explore that have data in them. What are you going to do if some of the data contradicts some of the lies that you're pushing here?
Mm-hmm.
And Quarren is like, well, if we find that, we will reevaluate and adapt our understanding of the truth. A noble scientific stance that he takes there.
I wish we hung on just for a moment with this guy in the aftermath of this answer, when he's like, fuck that. Your facts aren't going to get in the way of my beliefs.
Yeah, yeah. Later that night, Quarren has the museum to himself. And
God, you know he's jacked it all over the place in there, right?
Yeah, just...
museum after dark?
The fucking blacklight images of this museum are deeply troubling.
Just... sitting cross-legged on the torpedo casing.
It's like a bird of rarest spun heaven metal.
It's like an episode of Inside Edition. It's really bad.
Yeah.
I loved that the like simulation that they're looking through the window is in fact a holodeck. They're not like looking at a video that they've recreated. They're looking through a window into a holodeck.
It's so fun. I love these transitions.
He goes in there and he's now in Voyager's engine room, like engine room after dark. All the lights are dim, sort of lit by the warp core. And he's doing the thing of a scientist like talking to his tape recorder while he does the science. And the thing he is messing with, he realizes, is a optronic data stream. It's a hologram in there.
Yeah.
What could it be, Adam?
It's what eye doctors use.
Hmm. Did you go see an eye doctor?
I didn't, no.
Oh, man. Neither did I.
The thing puffs in the docent's face. It's like, ah!
And then just like out of a replicator materializes those weird sunglasses that they give you.
Those Voyager bastards.
I'm going to have blurry vision for 2.5 to 3 hours. Damn it!
I didn't arrange for a ride home.
I'm going to have to call an Uber. But then I'm going to have to come back here in an Uber tomorrow to pick up my car. Fuck! Oh, this is so inconvenient! How the fuck am I going to pay the parking meter? It's a 2-hour time limit. It's fucking 4 p.m. It ends at 8 p.m. Do I even have to stick around here? Sit in a coffee shop and not be able to read a book even? Fuck!
Ben.
Ben.
You're really an artist with that bit.
the doc appears, and he appears with his traditional opening line.
Yeah. The docent puts in a Red Baron pizza in the microwave, and the doc appears wearing a like a fighter jacket.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Oh, man. This is great.
Initially, totally stunned to be in engineering without his mobile emitter. Then he sees that he's alone with a Curian and alerts the bridge that they have an intruder.
He is freaked out by the Curian in a way that you know, based on your knowledge of Curians generally, seems a little unusual. Like he needs some distance between him and this guy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, you hear about the oppression of Curians, but we also need to understand is that we've been trained through years of media bias to fear Curians.
When the doc crosses the street to pass the Curian docent, I mean,
it's very troubling.
Just really makes you sad.
Yeah. And like the docent has to like go through life wondering if people are actually crossing the street or if they just like had business on that side of the street, right?
Right. Yeah.
A lot of this stuff is subtle.
It's true. Microaggressions, even.
Mm-hmm. Hollow aggressions, if you will.
The docent tries to get through to the doc, explaining what day it is, and the doc doesn't believe it. And the doc is finally like, well, if it truly is the year that you're saying it is, what happened to Voyager and the crew? The understanding that they're long dead by hundreds of years. If there's one main criticism I have about this episode is that like moments like these could really punch you in the heart. But unfortunately, the doc is incapable because he's a hologram of like truly feeling the depth of that knowledge.
Yeah.
But also by virtue of the like the pace of the plot, he's not given a moment to really consider that fully in a way that might make you feel something.
Because we have a ton of episode left to get through. And
yeah,
this does not feel like Ripley finding out her daughter is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a moment for sure, but we're past it pretty quickly. And Quarren is like, oh, shit, like we totally thought you were an android. And he's like, no, I'm obviously a hologram. And Quarren is realizing that like some of the conclusions that they had come to about this event 700 years in the past were not entirely accurate, but he's like, yeah, so like you probably need to start readying your defense because you're not exactly a historical specimen. You're really more of a defendant.
Yeah.
There are other issues to be resolved. What kind of issues?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, because like the doctor was the dude that did the biogenic weapons. He's like the Mengele of the story in the Curian version of the history.
The doc's like, what are you talking about? And the docent is like, well, we are in a museum and we can watch the program.
And so they do.
We're in a leather glove McLaughlin group next.
Issue one.
And we've cut back in time to the moment before the deployment of these bioweapons, right? And this is a meeting that is way more action-packed than McLaughlin groups usually are.
Yeah, this is a version of history where the Maquis form of, you know, controlling the lower ranks held a lot more sway on Voyager.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of punching and kicking and scuffles.
Yeah, if Eleanor Clift punched Pat Buchanan in the face over and over again.
I would tune in for that.
That's the version of the McLaughlin group this is.
Yeah, my living room would look like a episode of Inside Edition if Eleanor Clift routinely punched Pat Buchanan in the face. Very jackable.
The doc has some notes about this version of events.
Pure fiction. This is absurd.
Yeah, like why would Janeway break up a fight by shooting her phaser at her own computer screen?
Yeah.
That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Who does that?
Yeah, it's like throwing your remote at the TV. Like, look at you. Now you need to get a new TV.
She hoisted herself on her own petard.
It was just a baseball game.
And, you know, like I'm not this like mustache twirling android villain that I'm depicted as. Yeah. This is fucking bullshit. I'm a nice guy. I'm a bit prickly.
Sure, but look at my eyes. They look nothing like that.
Yeah. They're like soulless gray eyes. They're nice looking. I have beautiful peepers. It's one of my best qualities.
The doc can tell the docent that the Kyrians were aggressors, but the docent really isn't trying to hear this.
Yeah. He basically shuts him down and he's like, you know, like, I'll show you what really happened. And we get to the scene where Janeway wastes Tedrin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually standing in the room for this at this point. And I love the line about Janeway halfway across the galaxy rolling in her grave.
Mm-hmm.
Such a lurid depiction of Janeway. Like, it really does not sit well with the doc. He's not a fan.
It's actually a two-person coffin, me and Tom Mervyn's.
For the clothes you love to live in.
Chakotay was buried separately in a bathtub. No one knows why.
It was a very full coffin. Me and Tom Mervyn's and our many, many dogs. The dogs were buried in the coffin first. And then subsequent dogs were put into the coffin later, when it was exhumed, over and over again. Finally, we had to switch to a larger coffin to accommodate all of the dogs over the many, many decades that we lived.
Is this another love me, love my dog demand?
Yes.
How could I ever refuse you?
Thanks, honey.
Many people criticized us for having too Egyptian of a burial plan.
Can you imagine going to a funeral and, like, me and you are at a funeral, and I like elbow you, and I'm like, man, this is really Egyptian, isn't it? This is way too Egyptian, Ben.
Yeah.
Who the hell is this guy?
It's kind of uncomfortably Egyptian, I would say.
I barely knew him.
So the doctor is really, like, putting up a fight. Like, this is not the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
The Vaskins and us were doing, like, a pretty tame trade agreement, and the Kyrians attacked us. And Quarren is like, I'm not trying to hear this, man.
You could say that there are Vaskin differences between the different versions of events.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Vas deference, which is right. A different thing.
I mean, that's even more different.
But yeah.
Someone needs to get into the circuits of this computer with a soldering iron and
rewire some stuff. Quarren does not want to hear that Tedrin was a bad guy.
No, I mean, that version of Tedrin was cool as hell, right? Definitely need to preserve that fucking hero statement.
And so he just kind of, like, slams the phone on the doctor, right? He, like, shuts the program off without asking.
Yeah. You hate to see it.
Very mean.
Yeah.
Very childish, too. You know, he doesn't look good doing this. Like, I don't like the uncomfortable truth about my history. I'm not listening anymore.
This docent, I think, could use a little bit of a break. But he's basically living at the museum right now.
Yeah.
And later on, he records his log where he sort of admits that, you know, I think the doc is telling the truth in some areas.
It's just weird that they would have a doctor that would be so good at lying.
Yeah. For what reason?
Yeah.
It may just be that some of my longest held beliefs might be in dispute. Yeah. What am I to do about that new information?
Yeah. You know, there's two paths at that point. There's, the Tulsi Gabbard path and the more honorable path that this guy takes.
The docent looks up at the wall and the camera tracks up and it's January 5th. Oh, no.
No. So the doctor, in talking to him, said, like, if we could find the medical tricorder that I used in some of these scenes, like, I could corroborate some of my story by getting at the data inside it, assuming it survived.
And the docent's like, does the tricorder you're looking for have a blue band or a red band? And what does that mean also? Because I put both of them in my mouth all the time. I'm the docent. I can do that.
I have a sort of like puppy / baby way of exploring the world. Like I like to taste things to get a sense of them first.
Uh-huh. The red one is piquant.
Yeah. It's got a lot more flavor to it, you know? Like that French guy that ate a bicycle and said that the chain was the best part.
I'm willing to keep an open mind. That's the most I can promise.
So the next day, he goes and gets the tricorder, which is like, man, like your priceless relic just sitting out on a table in the middle of the museum for anybody to walk away with.
Yeah.
Wildly trusting culture.
This is like a children's museum, right? That invites you to touch.
Yeah.
This is like the tank of eels or whatever.
But like,
that's what they have at children's museums, right?
But like, when you've got Vaskins routinely coming into the museum and like yelling at you for telling a version of history that they find uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't like, not Larry David like putting on a pair of shoes at the Holocaust Museum and wearing them out.
They really knew how to make a shoe back then.
Yeah, well, they had cobblers.
You got to be concerned that somebody might be trying to erase this.
Yeah.
Especially based on what happens later.
Right.
But he takes this tricorder into the simulation, boots the doctor back up, and they get to work on it.
Inside the Voyager Encounter program, the doc and the docent have kind of a heated argument about what really happened and what might happen next to the doc.
Yeah, and the doc wants to like do his version of the program. He's like, let me show you the way I remember it, and you tell me like what you think.
We cut to the program that the doc has created, and he's not wearing pants,
yeah.
Like ever.
And his dick is really impressive.
I'm quite adept in the art of holographic programming.
It is like end of Boogie Nights. Holy shit. That's what the big deal was. I get it.
It's so big, dude.
I get why people were paying him $10.
I am a big, bright, shining star.
It's incredible. It's not quite a fire extinguisher. It's like a fire extinguisher you'd find in a race car under a seat, you know?
Right. Yeah. Or like in the overhead compartment on an airplane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it exactly.
They're in the captain's ready room and she's making this deal with the Vaskin ambassador guy.
Hey, Ben, the gloves are off in this simulation, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bare knuckle simulation. And the deal is not like, we'll show you our space butt hole if you kill our enemies. It's, we'll give you a bunch of dilithium if you give us some medical supplies. The Vaskins just want medical supplies from the Voyager.
It is a boring-ass trade deal.
Yeah. It's like fuel for ibuprofen.
Yeah.
The doctor knows about this exchange because he has been asked by the captain to prepare the medical supplies, and so he's done that. He's got the supplies ready to go in Cargo Bay 1, but there's a banger that gets dropped on the ship, and that is the attack of the Kyrians, and they're being fired on, and the Kyrians are not responding, and this is just like a totally unprovoked attack.
I like that canonically the Kyrians' weapons work just as well as we know them to, and that they can beam through shields. Because they've boarded the Voyager and they're in engineering.
Yeah. And Bad Tedrin is like taking Seven hostage and he takes engineers hostage.
Yeah.
This is a bad deal for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to get that platinum.
Get that robe enlargement.
I've got to get that platinum.
What now?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold. Captain
The captain, the doctor, and the ambassador guy like go down. They head towards Section 31, which caught my attention after everybody's been wearing black turtlenecks and gloves this whole episode. Yeah.
They don't get the mess hall right again. It's still empty.
Yeah. So after hours, you know?
Because Janeway, Daleth, and the doc have tracked the intruders down to there.
Yeah. The doc goes in first in order to draw some fire, which does not come, but this does impress Daleth for how heroic he is. And that was one moment where I wondered if the doc had like written that line for himself.
Yeah.
Little ego boost in his own version of history.
That's big fun. God, you think things are going to wrap up here with no more bloodshed? Because when Tedrin's down, you think the danger's effectively over. But then Daleth shoots him when he's down, and you're like, oh, God.
What the fuck, Daleth?
What are you doing, Daleth?
Yeah. Daleth seemed like sort of a hapless guy that like got in with a bad crowd in the other version of history. In this version of history, Daleth seems like a real fucking asshole.
We would need help if we wanted to destroy you.
Yeah, I didn't think he had it in him.
Yeah, it's bad stuff. Tedrin is killed. The doc scans him with the medical tricorder. He's like, yeah, sorry, nothing I can do.
Yeah. The thing about when Kyrian dies is their tonsil stones just kind of fall out onto the ground.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh, God. Ugh.
They do that thing instead of like when you wave your hand over their face and their eyes closed, you wave your hand over their face and the tonsil stones fall out. And then our family members keep the tonsil stones as kind of a memento.
And post a video of them coming out to Reddit.
Yeah.
Very entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, why do we even go on Reddit?
The doc continues to give background to the story, which is great because we realize that this is a simulation that's being attended by another tour group. But it's no ordinary tour group. It's like a tour group of politicians, right?
Government officials or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's members of both species in this tour group. And the Lady Halitosin feels that she is there purely as sort of an act of tokenism.
Please, this isn't about race.
It's always about race.
But the Vaskin dude is like very interested in hearing this because it does go a long way to sort of redeeming some of the horrible stories people tell about his people. So he's like, yeah, like I'm really into this line of research. We should keep looking into this.
Things come to a point with the information on the tricorder. Like if they can prove what kind of weapon killed Tedrin. His name is Tedrin, right?
Tedrin, yeah.
They probably call him Ted around the office.
Right. Teddy to his friends.
If it was a Vaskin weapon that killed Tedrin or a Kyrian weapon that killed Tedrin, that's pretty crucial information in this conflict.
It really is. And, you know, it'll help them understand what role Voyager played and understand the origins of this conflict more fully. And, the Halitosin lady is like, I think instead of doing this, we should arrest this fucking doctor and charge him with war crimes because he is a war criminal! He hooked those hoses into his head and then shoot phaser beam down on our planet and kill hundreds of thousands of people! Why are we listening to his story?
Hello?
This like giving Joseph Mengele the budget to make his own film. Why would we do that?
This lady's pissed.
Yeah.
And it appears that she and the lead arbiter on the other side are at historical erasure heads.
Okay, Paul!
But the lead arbiter gets the final say because his people are in a slightly higher esteem. Culturally speaking.
Yeah, kind of proving the point of her tokenism, I guess.
Really, really does.
Yeah.
So they get to work on like decoding this tricorder and they're like working on unlocking the secrets that it holds. They have an interesting conversation about BLT, who has notably not appeared in the simulation because presumably Roxanne Dawson was on family leave. But this is when bangers start getting dropped, not on the simulated Voyager.
No.
But on the museum itself.
Museum bangers.
Yeah.
The most dangerous kind. There's a lot of fragile stuff in a museum.
Right. And these are bangers that no velvet rope could hold back.
Yeah. We see that the museum is under attack and it's the Kyrians pouring through the doors. Yeah. And the reason why is that the truth is so frightening to them that their only choice now is to just bust in and break a bunch of stuff. They're looking for this Mike Pence guy. Can't find him. And some Kyrian shithead puts his boots up on Janeway's ready room desk.
Yeah.
Sucks.
He's in her desk drawer.
Yeah.
Is that your idea of political protest? Really?
The docent, like, impotently tries to stop them. Like, and he just gets shoved across the room. These guys have pipes.
Yeah.
What is the docent going to do?
I was scared for him.
I thought for sure they'd power up the dustbuster that they have in the exhibit or something, you know?
That Dustbuster is established so many times visually. Yeah. And it went, like, there's a whole scene that opens with like a close up on the Dustbuster. I was like,
I know
somebody is getting wasted with that thing, and it never comes into play.
Yeah. Yeah. Never does. This place is thoroughly fucked over, this museum.
Yeah. There's like the morning after the big high school rager kind of energy to the next scene where, you know, the light has come up and the museum is in terrible shape. They can't find the tricorder. That's one issue that they have.
Yeah, the other issue is the guy passed out and sleeping on the stairs. Like, how drunk do you have to be to sleep on stairs?
And they're like, does anybody know this guy? Was he even at the party, or did he sleep on these stairs?
I think he works at the grocery store.
So weird.
How does anyone know him?
So the doctor is like looking at this, looking at the wreckage that the truth of his existence has led to. And he proposes, I'm going to decompile my program, or I'm going to teach you how to decompile my program.
Yeah.
Like if I am like this catalytic to racial violence in your society, like get rid of me.
I can't do that to you.
Then I'll do it myself.
No!
His point is so interesting here. I mean, this is the central point of the episode. Like, do facts really matter? How much do they matter if those facts are centuries ago? And wouldn't it be better if we could just lie to preserve the peace? Like a family that doesn't talk to each other about hard things.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting position for the doctor to take.
Yeah.
I can kind of understand it from a, like, being horrified at the violence that has broken out on your behalf. But also, like, he's a physician and a caretaker. And so, like, you would think that, like, some psychotherapy knowledge might be part of that. And it feels, like, very counter to that school of thought.
Well, the one time the doc dabbled in therapy, bad things happened, right?
That's true. Yeah. So he's taking a sort of anti-therapy stance.
Yeah. I love the realization that this, too, is a simulation.
Yeah, this is a thing that is done all the time in Star Trek. Like we're still in the holodeck. We're not out of the simulation yet, but this is such a unique take on that, which is we are in a different museum watching a history of how our people established peace among each other.
I love the idea that every single thing in this episode is a part of that simulation. From the beginning to the end, like all the conflicts and the arguments about everything. It's great.
It really is. It's an interesting button because the lady leading this tour is like, yeah, so the doctor, you know, was our medical chancellor for a while, but then he took off to go, you know, find out whatever happened to the Voyager. And we never heard from him again. And that's the way the EMH is written off the show.
He shot a guy and stole their shuttle. He knocked up like a lot of people. Like there are six Kyrian children that look like the doc.
There's Vaskins, there's Kyrians, and then there are people that are sort of like half hologram here.
Yeah.
That's where they came from.
Yeah. Wow. What a man. Did you like this episode, Ben?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with. Most of the time. But I don't like bullets. I don't like threats. And I don't like you.
I do like this episode. The episode really scared me at the end because I thought it was going in the direction of the, like, history doesn't matter argument that the doc is making.
Hmm.
I was, like, looking at the progress bar creeping across the screen and I was like, shit, like, how are they gonna, like, how is the end of this episode just going to be the doctor saying the truth of history doesn't matter if it's too painful for people to bear?
Right.
And I like that it doubles back and sort of ends on the opposite take, but hard to square the existence of this episode with the EMH being on the show going forward, right? Like, haven't we been told that it's like impossible to make a second instance of him before?
I don't know. I mean, this is an episode that glosses over that aspect to it, that during the attack, in an emergency situation, the ship created a backup and that backup was then stolen. I don't know. It seems as though this should not be possible, but I mean, clearly does.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, but I really liked the message of it, and I liked the kind of story structure of it. If it's a bottle episode that isn't like a super perfect fit in the continuity of the show, I'm totally fine with that.
Well, yeah, I think, you know what? I think you just answered your own question, Ben, because the entire thing was a simulation. I believe that there are still many aspects that may be not entirely true. And so the idea of how the dot got there might not be factually correct either.
Yeah. I wonder if they thought about having more like visual mistakes in the second version, in the doctor's version of events.
Yeah.
Like the comm badges don't look right, or people have the wrong number of pips or something, mm-hmm. because that is also recreated from history.
Neelix's food is just so good.
Everybody loves Leola roots.
The reason that no one's in the mess hall is because it's a riot in there every time trying to get to the front of the buffet line. They just did away with it.
How about you, Adam? Did you like this episode?
I did, but it made me sad because it just made me think about how much value we place on our own history and like how our history kind of leads us around on a leash so often, like as a culture and politically, you know, like the importance that we put on like societal figures or political figures of like centuries ago. And I'm talking specifically like about originalism and the founders or whatever.
Right, right.
It's insane, and it keeps getting more insane that originalism in any form is tolerated, you know, as the philosophy,
mm-hmm.
either politically or for our society. It sucks. Like, we should be moving forward and not looking back. And so some of the questions that this episode asks about how much weight we put on those things, I mean, you could both sides this argument in the context of this episode.
Yeah, but I think that that's like one of the strengths of this episode is it really does force you to reckon with both things. Like, we want to be forward-looking. We want to build a future that's better for everyone. We also need to not ignore the things that have led to, and like, there are tempting ways of going too hard to one side or the other of these arguments.
That's why being a cafeteria historian is bullshit. Like, it's all history or none of it is. Like, right. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
But that's just not how things work.
Which is why I choose to leave it.
Yeah.
Because I can't take all of it. Too much.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, let's just live in the moment, man.
You know where I want to live? The Priority One inbox.
I think when we get over there, the hair and tattoos are going to seem a little different. And what we were expecting.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Heath, the Clemens pimp. You remember Heath, right?
I think I do.
And it is to Ben.
That's me.
Message goes like this. Hi, Ben. It pains me deeply, but I'm sending cash that doesn't necessitate a Clemens impression.
Well, I appreciate that, Heath.
I want to wish your growing family every happiness and be the very first person to offer you unsolicited advice.
Wow. Yeah, nobody's done that yet.
Consider renting a snoo. It saved my sanity. All my hopes. Also, for both, which Trek conveyance would you like to be blown out of the most?
Man.
Ben, my question for you is, what is a snoo?
A snoo is a very fancy bassinet or crib or something that has I think it's like motorized to rock the baby.
Oh, is that a thing that delivers food? You'll see, like, driving on a sidewalk. You can just have a snoo drive your baby home from a dinner you're having.
If you ever see one of those driving on a sidewalk, assume there's a baby in there.
Okay.
No, yeah, it's like, I don't know. And they cost like $1,700. So, like, most people can't afford them, but you can rent them.
Oh.
Because, you know, your baby is an infant for a finite amount of time.
Yeah, but babies are also filthy. So a used snoo is kind of a hose it out situation.
You would hope. Yeah. I don't want a poo-colored snoo.
Yeah.
we've considered it. Our baby is actually sleeping really well. We're putting him down for, you know, 6-hour stretches. So we get up in the middle of the night and feed him once and then get back to bed. And we're actually doing okay in that regard. But if it starts to become a problem, I definitely am aware of the snoo and I appreciate the advice.
The difference between 4, 5, and 6 hours of continuous sleep is enormous. And I'm saying this as a fucking puppy man. Like, my yeah. shit isn't bad at all, sleep-wise, compared to what you're going through. But it felt like once we crossed 5 hours into six, like, that was an amount of sleep that did not reduce me into insanity. Like, that was enough
yeah,
to get
totally,
by.
Yeah, totally. Our next P1 here is from...
Well, you got to answer the question. Which Trek conveyance would you like to be blown out of?
The D. It's always the D.
Yeah.
I don't want to see something hit the D that makes a hole in the side, but if it gets me and Adam blown out of it in something, worth it.
I want to be blown out of the D, but sucked into something else, right?
So, whoa.
So, like, there's been a rip in the side of the ship by some space butthole, and it's sucking. It's sucking real hard.
Wow.
And then I go flying out of the ship, but I get sucked into this space butthole. Who knows where I've gone?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a Lerv.
Wow.
Maybe I'm not.
There's some hope.
But either way, I'm not just blown. I'm also sucked. And that's what I want.
Folks listening will know that there's a Event Horizon special bonus app over behind the paywall at MaximumFun.org.
Here I come, motherfuckers!
Big fun.
There's an extended decompression scene in that movie. I feel like, you know, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. We're lucky that the Star Trek industrial complex would even consider blowing us out of a hole in the side of a ship.
We're lucky they don't sue us to Bolivia.
Yeah, but if they did, it would be really fun to have a scene where, like, one of us was holding on and the other was like,
yeah,
you know, had the other one by the hand and it's like, don't let go, don't let me go.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see the fingers like give up one by one on the edge of the console or whatever, and then we go into the space butthole.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Where maybe we lived.
Yeah. Maybe that's the Nexus. Maybe we're on a ranch in Montana riding horses with Jim Kirk.
God.
Cooking eggs.
If it's just fucking Victorian Christmas every day for an infinite amount of time, I'd fucking drop Kirk's space toaster into the bathtub with me. Just end it.
Adam, our next priority one message is from Notorious FOD, and it is to Benjamin R. Harrison. That's me. Hey, Ben, when Dr. Bashir stays over at your place, does he sleep in your bathtub? Asking for a friend. Also, Ben, if Kevin Uxbridge wanted to visit Africa, what advice would you give him?
It doesn't take a lot to get been telling you.
What are the risks of getting schismed while on the trip? And would it help to take Rolaren or Wesley, the boy, with him? Please do all the drops.
The boy.
Let's see. I'm guessing the risks of getting schismed are pretty low if you know, you know, where you're going and what you're doing. I would take Rolaren with me for sure. I do not think I would take the boy with me, though.
I am a traveler of all of space and time.
Yeah.
And Bashir does sleep in my tub. I don't want him, you know, we throw enough peed on bed sheets in the laundry in my house without Dr. Bashir sleeping in the guest bed.
Just an evergreen comment by you, Ben. And if Kevin wanted to visit Africa, what advice would you give him? Kevin, try not to genocide anything over there.
Yeah, they've had enough hardship.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, if you'd like to leave a Priority One message for a friend, coworker, or loved one.
Or me.
Yeah.
You could try writing one to me next time. That'd be cool.
I don't see what the upside would be of that. But, you know, I guess we could try anything once.
Hmm.
Go ahead and head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set it up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm going to give it to the Race Riot crowd. It's a kind of a collective Shimoda.
Sure is, yeah.
The people that run into the museum to smash stuff just do not look like they're dressed for a race riot. They look like they're dressed for, like, business or something. Like, it's like women in like knee length dresses with like long leggings underneath them, and dudes in like the alien equivalent of suits. But, you know, they don't look casual enough to be people that spontaneously rioted.
My Shimoda is the same group of people, but for kind of a different reason. These guys are wielding batons or segments of pipe that they look afraid of swinging with any velocity. They barge in there and they're like they don't even hit the dinosaur bones. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you want to baseball bat those dinosaur bones? No one touches the dinosaur. They're just swinging at glass.
I want to know what they thought that dinosaur did on the Starship Voyager, like how they thought that factored into the Voyager incident story.
Yeah.
One of the great unanswered questions of this episode.
Also, there are so few sets in Star Trek where there's an upper floor and a lower floor that you could throw someone off of during a fight.
Oh, yeah.
And this is that set. Like, no one takes a tumble down the stairs and no one Wilhelm screams off of a railing into an airbag.
There isn't a green plasma fire for anyone to fall into.
I guess I was hoping for a more violent riot. Yeah, that's me. That's what I enjoy.
Yeah, I guess so. Good Shimodas.
Yeah.
Let's talk about next week's episode, Adam. Why don't you head to gach.biz/game and tell us how we will be recording Season 4, Episode 24, Demon. Voyager lands on a demon-class planet in order to mine for deuterium.
Shut up, really?
To replenish the ship's dangerously low supply.
That's not a real thing.
Yeah, there's M-class, there's L-class, there's Demon-class.
So the Nuck planet was like sex-class?
Yeah.
Rise as a fuck-class planet?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Come on. There's no demon class planet.
There is now, baby.
Are you the roller or am I?
I think you are.
Or is me?
Is you, Adam.
All right, Ben. Well, right now we are on the doorstep of a banger. Our runabout is on square 23.
Oh, right.
And I've calibrated the game to take place on today, Ben. Halloween.
Wow.
I'm going to take these spooky dice in my hand.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Bad luck things happen on Halloween. I see that naked now that we could hit. I'm worried. I'm worried for you. I'm worried for your commitment to continuing as a co-host on this show.
I rolled a 6 last time. A 6 gets us to the naked now. This is the stupidest timeline, so I'm fully expecting to roll a 6. Thankfully, I've rolled a 2.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
It's hopped us over the banger and landed us on square 25. Ben, the Demon Planet episode will be a regular episode.
Not recording in the nude in a pool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Just a regular old demon episode.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Well, that was a lot of fun, Adam.
Wasn't it?
We've got people to thank, my friend.
Yeah.
People without whom this would not be possible. And the first group of people I want to give a special citation to are those who support our work at MaximumFun.org/join. You set up a monthly membership, you get all that behind-the-paywall content, our recent Event Horizon episode, ton of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing new episodes once a month. We got lots of fun stuff in store.
Yeah.
I think you're really going to enjoy it. You go check it out.
In the public television parlance, it's friends of DeSoto like you.
Mm.
Those that financially support the show.
Yeah, you hear that bank of phones ringing behind me?
Yeah.
That's people hearing the call right now, calling in, setting up their membership.
It's weird. I see all the telephone cables, but I don't see any of the phones or the operators.
Yeah. What is that?
They're all wrapped around your doorknob?
Uh-huh.
Kind of a bizarre contraption, kind of a clockwork.
Well, you know, some people have more elaborate ways of getting there than others. Adam.
You know what a freeway is of supporting the show, Ben? And I don't mean like a place you drive your car. I'm talking about leaving a review or hitting a star on your podcast app of choice.
Yeah, or just recommending it to a friend.
Yeah.
We really appreciate folks that do that.
Take a friend aside, look at them in the eyes and say, we need to talk. and then just sort of let that hang for an entire afternoon and then meet up with them later.
Let them worry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you tell them about Greatest Trek / Greatest Generation.
Yeah. Speaking of Greatest Trek, that's our social media handle on Instagram and Twitter. And those are also great places to talk about why you like the show. Use the hashtag GreatestGen to talk about this show. We got to thank our card daddy, Bill Tilly, who runs those social media accounts, makes them real fun to follow. Check them out.
There's that good part of Twitter, right? The carve out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a Friends of DeSoto group on Twitter. You can join that. You can also join the Discord, drunkshimoda.com.
Yeah.
You can sign up for our mailing list at gach.biz/mail.
You can buy yourself a t-shirt.
That's true.
At podshop.biz.
Tons of great stuff over there. Get yourself a Friends of DeSoto phone case. How about you?
How about you?
Thank you, Nick Ditmore, for making our show art and helping us get podshop.biz up and running. We also got a shout out to Adam Raguzia, who made the Janeway song. Original theme music based on the Picard song by Dark Materia.
Yeah.
Check out Adam Raguzia's podcast. Adam Raguzia podcast, it is called.
It is called that.
He's also got a great YouTube cooking channel.
I listen to it all the time.
Anything else we need to talk about?
Oh, we need...
Oh, Windy Pretty!
Yeah. Come on.
How could I forget?
What are you doing?
Oh, my God.
You can't forget our producer!
He's fucking pissed at me right now. I can just tell.
Oof.
He's like... listening to this audio, the raw audio. Windy, edit this to be like further forward in the credits, just so it seems like I'm not the asshole that I really am.
Wow.
Windy Britty, without whom this whole operation would quickly fall apart.
Yeah.
And we appreciate everyone that supports the show, which enables us to work with a stone cold pro like Windy every day.
Hell yeah.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that Ben and Adam are recording from the surface of a terrifying planet. A demon class, which is a real thing.
Maybe it won't be that bad. Maybe it's just what they called themselves to keep people away.
Oh, like a Greenland-Iceland thing.
You get it.
Yeah, that's clever. The old switcheroo. Hey, why is everybody on this demon class planet rocking Nuck?
Jesus. Just have a full-on fucking stroke on the show.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.